I talk a lot about willingness to be misunderstood. That's a really important thing to have. If you're going to do anything new or different in the world, it is going to be misunderstood, sometimes by well-meaning critics, sometimes by self-interested critics. You'll get all kinds. And it's okay. It's all part of the process. The only way to avoid criticism altogether is to be completely conventional in everything you do. So how do you respond to the criticism? What do you do? What's the right thing to do? Well, I think the first thing you do is you ask, are the critics right? You listen, you ask, are they right? Or even if they're not completely right, is there some piece of it that's right that you can be inspired by? And then if you decide, by the way, that the answer is no, that you believe, you have conviction that what you're doing is the right course, then no force in the world should be able to move you. You should have a deep keel. But if you decide that your critics, that there is something, then you should change. And I give you an example from the early days of Amazon of one where we refused to change. This was, we were small enough that most people didn't pay much attention to us or care about us. I'm taking you way back to like 1995, 1996. We pioneered this thing called customer reviews. And I got a letter one day from a publisher, a book publisher, that said, hey, you must not understand your business. You're losing sales because you're allowing negative customer reviews on the book detail pages. Why don't you just put positive reviews? And I thought about this, and I thought, no, he's wrong. We don't make money when we sell things. We make money when we help people make purchase decisions. It was a different framing. And so getting to today's news, you know, we listened to our critics and we decided the framing that we have been using all these years is competitive compensation. We look at what other job opportunities there are and what the competitive compensation levels are, and we offer competitive compensation and actually non-competitive, world-leading benefits packages, but just competitive compensation. So in light of this, you know, thinking about this and trying to decide, do we want to change? We realized, we just made a decision, well, you can offer competitive compensation or you can decide to lead. And as soon as we framed it that way, we're like, let's decide to lead. Great and decision. I think people will follow.
And what was it the critics said that caught your eye?
Basically, they were saying, they were, if you read between the lines, because a lot of the specific criticism was not correct, but if you read between the lines, what they really wanted us to do, they said, because you could also say, look, there's so many companies, there are all the fast food companies, there's, you know, the baristas, and there's, you know, like, wait a second, why are you focusing on us? But that, what they're really saying is, we're focusing on you because you're a leader, and we want you to lead. That's what they're actually saying. And as soon as you recognize it that way, instead of it feeling like criticism, it feels empowering. They're asking us to lead because we're a symbol of innovative, iconic company. We're a gold standard for innovation. We should lead. You know, we all have adversity in our lives. I doubt if you really, you know, if you know somebody, any friend or anybody that you talk to, there's no lack of adversity. And by the way, that's good, because it's what teaches us how to get back up. You fall down, you get back up. It always happens. And, you know, you get certain gifts in life and you want to take advantage of those. I guess my advice on adversity and success would be to be proud not of your gifts, but of your hard work and your choices. So, you know, you may be, the kinds of gifts you get in life, you know, you might be really good at math. It might be really easy for you. That's a kind of gift. But practicing that math and taking it to the next step, that could be very challenging and hard and take a lot of sweat. That's a choice. You can't really be proud of your gifts because they were given to you. You can be grateful for them and thankful for them. But your choices, you choose to work hard. You choose to do hard things. Those are choices that you can be proud of.
People like us, we are getting used to be criticized. We are getting used to be said no. People say no to you. When people say yes to you, we really appreciate. You know, why people should say yes to you? You have to prove. So as an entrepreneur, you have to get used to be challenged, have to get used to be said no by the other people, by the investors, by your customers, by the people. But this is the opportunity. When everybody believe it, you have no chance. When only a few people believe it, you prove it, that's your chance.
How at the end of the day, what has been the driver which has made you who you are?
Yeah, I wish people can say yes to me, but if they say yes, I have no choice. I have to accept it. Of course, you're not happy when people say no. Have a good sleep, wake up, try it again. It's always my fault, not the other people's fault. Why you can convince people if you cannot prove it? But the thing is that, very important, there are two group of people you have to convincing. First group people, your team. They believe in you, they trust in you, and they believe the things we agreed together. And second is your customers. They really love your products. And investors, it's okay.
There's this culture in Silicon Valley that kind of makes startups seem glamorous. And I never really believed that, right? I never had a goal of starting a startup. And my goal when I realized that I had a company was to get it to be a good company as quickly as possible, right? And kind of get out of what you'd call the like risky startup phase where you are just like constantly about to die and where you can get to a point where you can actually like do some interesting things and make a lot more interesting bets. So I don't know, I never read a lot of the literature on this. And I mean, maybe if I had, then I wouldn't have made so many mistakes. But so I don't know if learning for me is the right way to go on this. But I mean, but it did, I think—
Your model must have come from somewhere though, even if it was unintentional, right? Like, were you influenced by Peter Thiel or Sean?
Well, yes, I was influenced by all these people once I met them. I hadn't really heard of Peter Thiel before
Sean introduced
me.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but I mean, he was massively influential on my thinking, right? I mean, a lot of the early lessons that I took on how to think about strategy came from Peter and Sean. And I did pay a lot of attention when I was growing up to Microsoft. I grew up, using, Windows 3.1 and then Windows 95, and I just thought that those were like the most unbelievable things.
On an individual level, I think it's always really good if there's something that you're incredibly passionate about and just sort of find to be intrinsically interesting and that people pursue that. One of the resolutions I came up with a number of years ago was to always value substance over status, substance over prestige. And, if I sort of was giving my younger self advice on what to do or how to think about one's life, I probably would still go to Stanford, might still go to law school, but I'd ask a lot more questions why I was doing these things. And I think if I was honest about it, too much of it was driven by prestige and status and not quite enough about really the substance of trying to learn things. And, I sort of just think of it as this sort of crazy rolling quarter life crisis, and sort of culminated in this big New York law firm where, from the outside everybody wanted to get in, from the inside everybody wanted to get out. After I lasted 7 months and 3 days, and after when I left, one of the people down the hall said, it's so reassuring to see you leave, Peter. I had no idea it was possible to escape from Alcatraz, which again, and all you had to do was go through the front door. But people's identities get so wrapped up in the things they compete for that it was inconceivable for people to actually do that. And then the question was, how had I ended up there? Why had I not thought about that more? And I think it was that I had taken too many of these shortcuts of valuing sort of what was prestigious, what was conventional, over what I really wanted to do. So I think always substance over status.